Welcome to the Bill Cartwright Show with our special guest, NBA player, college NBA coach, Dennis Hobson. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Bill, man. Glad to be on, I should say, man. Hope all is well your way.
Yeah, we do share a lot of real estate landscape together.
That's right.
It is pretty amazing. But this is what I want to start, is that I just want to start with you, and I want to start with your past. Talk about where you grew up, and I want you to talk about mom and dad.
Okay. Yeah, I grew up in Toledo, Ohio, man, before I went off to Columbus, Ohio to go to Ohio State University. I'm the baby of five. Mom and dad, man, I just lost my dad actually in December of 2021, I should say. And my mom and dad, they've been married for 70 years and before he passed.
Wow.
And man, I had a great life. And again, you're always going to have it good when you're the baby. And hey, man, I had an opportunity to enjoy both of my parents for a long time. My mom's still living. So I'm thankful for that.
Now, talk about yourself as a high schooler. What kind of kid were you? Now, we knew you played sports, but what kind of kid were you?
Well, let me say this, man. Really, the sporting piece was kind of pushed. It was kind of forced. I was the type of kid I used to like riding. I like to tinker. Let's put it that way. I like to tinker. I like to play. And my one of my fetishes was motorcycles and mini bikes. So when you talk about sports wasn't the number one thing in my life coming up. It was always the, motorcycles and mini bikes and tinkering. And again, I think I found the sporting side of things when people recognized the talent that I had and they just kind of forced me into playing it.
Now, who kind of influenced you that way? You know, when I was a kid, my cousin, who was about 3 years older than me, he was an all-city basketball player. I play with him all the time. So I really wanted to be like him, but he showed me a lot. So who kind of guided you when you were in high school?
It was coaches. It was coaches. Again, that's just coaches watching me and seeing me as a young kid, maybe playing around in the gym or out on the basketball court, or I shouldn't have said the basketball court, at the parks, actually. And they just recognized and saw talent in me. And actually, they would call my parents and beg my parents to push me into playing. But again, I just never really had a love for any type of sports at the time when I was a younger kid. I started to grow my love for the sport as I got older.
So when you were in high school, so that now you're a senior and you had to feel like, you know, I could be pretty good at this.
You know what, Bill, I didn't even play as a freshman. I played in the fifth and sixth grade. I played in the seventh and eighth grade. I never played in the ninth grade. And I started back playing in the 10th grade, and I had some success on the JV team. And then they moved me up to varsity towards the end, towards tournament time. They moved me up to varsity and I played well. And then I started getting a lot of press. And once I started getting the press and people started to, you know, come out and watch me play, that's when I really started taking a liking for the game and I really started to commit to it more than what I did, you know, coming up as a young kid.
So we know you ended up at Ohio State, but what were some of your other thoughts and different schools that you could have possibly gone to?
Well, what I did was I actually committed to University of Cincinnati. Not a lot of people know that, but I committed to University of Cincinnati. And Coach Badger, Ed Badger, was the head coach at that time. He actually got fired. And I don't know if we called it decommitting back in the day, but I decommitted because I don't know another word to use, but I decommitted. And Ohio State had been recruiting me. And Calvin Ramsey, which was a Toledo guy, he went to Ohio State and he actually played with my older brother. And, hey, I just kind of rolled the dice, man, and said, hey, I'm going to go to Ohio State. And in going to Ohio State, it actually worked out for me. I was able to accomplish a lot of things. I was on All-American. I'm still the school's all-time leading scorer. I'm still the school's single-season leading scorer. So it was a roll of the dice, and I got lucky, man. That's what happened. I got lucky.
Now talk about some of the other guys who were there.
I had, I played with my freshman year, I had Tony Campbell, and Tony went on to be an NBA player as well. And then Brad Sellers, he had actually transferred over from Wisconsin. So I had the opportunity of playing with Brad for several years before he went pro. So had a great group of guys. Had a lot of guys when I talk about, or when people talk about the scoring record, I'm thankful that I had a lot of guys that allowed me to be myself and allowed me to carry them and help them. But without their help, I wouldn't have been able to accomplish some of the awards that I did accomplish.
Yeah, obviously you did well. So then now you're a senior.
Mm-hmm.
So you know you're going to get drafted. So what are you thinking?
You know what? I'm going to tell you, Bill, it's funny because really I really started committing to the game of basketball. People won't believe this. After my freshman year at Ohio State. Again, we had a guy that went down because of academics. So I started a lot as a freshman and I started to get a feel for the game. But my commitment grew during that summer because I started watching a lot of film. I started working a little harder with my coaches and individually. And, you know, as time went on, I started having success. And I know I led the team in scoring my junior year with Brad. And Brad was a senior. I averaged 20.9 points a game, and I was all Big Ten. And then when Brad left, I averaged 29 point something as a senior and actually was second lead scorer in the nation. But, you know, in all the conversations that surrounded myself and actually Reggie Williams out of Georgetown, it could have went either way. I mean, one or two. I was number one or he was number two, or he was number two and I was number one. So that's, like you said, I think with all the conversation that was going on, I knew that I would be one of the top players picked in that 1987 draft.
So when you did get drafted, were you happy to the team you went to?
Don't really know that I was happy. Again, I think as a Midwest kid, just knowing teams like Cleveland, Indiana Pacers, Detroit, and places like that, and not knowing a whole lot about the East Coast, it's a totally, and you know this because you played on the East Coast, but it's totally different being a Midwest kid. So it was kind of tough. I don't know that I was well received when I got selected because of Reggie Williams. He played at Georgetown and people had the opportunity to see him play on TV a lot because of the Big East. So I had mixed feelings. I had mixed feelings when I got drafted to New Jersey.
Hey, who was the coach in Jersey?
Dave Wool. Dave Wool was a coach, and it's funny, Billy. See, I have four coaches, man, in 3 years. So I don't know how that helped, man, with me being a rookie and coming from Ohio State with a little bit of consistency about, you know, in my life to that point, to going to like a lot of inconsistent moments in New Jersey. So again, I had the opportunity and I'm appreciative of that. But I don't know. Again, I have mixed feelings. I had mixed feelings when I got drafted by Jersey.
So after you leave Jersey, you did go to the Midwest.
Mm-hmm.
So talk about that.
I was fortunate, man. I was fortunate to come to you guys. It was a big change for me. And the reason I say it was a big change was because you guys were, you were committed, man. You had a goal, you had a mission. Well, you had a mission first and you had a goal. And I think, you know, coming from New Jersey, which again, I love people like Buck Williams, man, and some of the guys that I played with. Buck really took care of me as a rookie in the three years that I was there. But I think it was more of a, not going to say that you get used to losing, but it was almost like a way of life when I was in Jersey. And when I got traded to Chicago, man, like I said, you guys were committed. You were on a mission because you were right there, and to have that opportunity just to compete every day against all you guys, some of the better players who play the game, and the challenges that you guys threw out there, and the physicality and the way that you guys approach the game, man, it just brought new life. It brought new life to me, man, as a young kid. So I was super excited about that.
So after you leave Chicago, then you ended up
Sacramento.
Going west.
Yeah.
Wow.
That one right there, Billy C, kind of bought the mojo back, man. I was able to, you know, I went back to a team similar to New Jersey. They didn't win all the time, but yeah, you know, myself, Mitch Richmond, Spud Webb, Wayman Tisdale, Anthony Bynum, Lionel Simmons, guys like that, man. I just had the opportunity to kind of get my mojo back in. I mean, I was averaging over 10 points a game in 18 minutes of play. So it just kind of, even though we didn't win a lot, but it brought my mojo back in regards to playing. You guys brought the energy back. But when I got traded to Sacramento, it just gave me an opportunity to go back out there and kind of pick up where I left off my last year in New Jersey, being able to shoot the basketball and score the basketball.
I was trying to remember who was the coach out there.
Oh, man, we had Bob McKenna. We had you're making me draw a blank, man. It's been so long ago. But yeah, we had some good guys out there. Dick Mata. I had to think about that. Yeah.
Not know that. I didn't know Dick Mata was out there. I should know. That's my hometown.
Yeah. Yeah.
So after that, you ended up, and I did not even know this, but you went overseas, like all over the place. It was incredible.
Mm-hmm. I did. I went overseas and actually, I'm gonna be honest with you. I got bad advice from my agent after my years in Sacramento. At the end of my year in Sacramento, had guaranteed money on the table, but it wasn't a multi-year deal. It was just for a one-year deal. And my agent thought I should have got a multi-year deal because of the way I played. But they had made so many mistakes and they were still paying a lot of people that had played for them in the past to where let them tell they couldn't afford a multi-year deal. And actually that's when Walt Williams, he got drafted that year as well. So got some bad advice, went overseas, man. Now, the great thing about being overseas was I played in great places, had the opportunity to meet a lot of people. And I think the places that I played in, when I say great, man, I mean, just like being here in the States, you know, restaurants, people speaking English, never a third world country like some of these guys go and play in. It was always first class, man. It was always big time. And I felt right at home. And I felt at home to where I wanted to finish out my playing career over in Europe.
So did you go to Spain? Did you go to Israel? Did you go to, just tell me a couple of places that you went.
Well, I started off in Spain. I was over in Spain for a couple of years, and then I went over to France. And I went to France for a couple of years, and then I went over to Israel. Actually, I played with a lot of Americans over in the countries that I was in. But I played with Brad. I played with Brad Sellers over in Europe for a little bit. I played with Telus Frank over in Europe a little bit. So, again, man, the places that I were in, just like home. I felt like I was at home when I was over in Europe.
You know, I always wanted to play overseas just because I wanted to have that experience. I thought it would be pretty cool to be over there. And I had kids. I wanted them to have that experience. But I never had that opportunity. So I kind of regret that. But
you could have went if you wanted to, man. But you know, hey, you were still doing your thing in NBA.
Yeah, I was probably pretty much like a lot of NBA players. I really didn't have a clue what I should be doing. I knew what I wanted to do.
Right.
But yeah, what a great career you had over there. Mm-hmm. So then, let me ask you a question. What now, in your last year of playing, how do you know it was your last year of playing? Did your body tell you? How did you know?
It was a great question. I mean, that's a great question, man. I think the biggest thing is that started getting older, started, you know, I'm not going to say not really enjoying going back over, but it was almost like a chore going back over. So it was one of those things to where, Do you go back over or do you just stay home? You know, because I fared well over there. The money was great. So I was able to do what I needed to do in regards to that. And my body was still fine. You know, I just think it was more of a a thing to where I wanted to be with family. I wanted to be with family. I just wanted to start winding down a little bit and started figuring out what my next journey was going to be.
So interesting enough, you start coaching. Now, did you do that right away or did you what did you do?
I didn't start coaching. What I did was I was still a year and a half away from getting my degree from Ohio State because after we lost our last game, my senior year to Georgetown in the Sweet 16, I just quit going to school, getting ready to or starting to prepare myself for the draft. And when my career was over with overseas, I went back to school. I was a year and a half away, went back and enrolled in school, got my degree. And after I got my degree, I was at Ohio State, was in the Final Four. I think they were in New Orleans, and Rolly Massimino was standing in front of me. And I met Coach Mass, and Coach Mass told me that he was coaching at a small school, or actually a program he had just started in Florida at Northwood University, an NAIA school. And he said he was looking for somebody. And we connected, man. He flew me in, and one thing led to another, and he hired me right there on the spot. And I told him, yeah, flew back over to Ohio, man, and got things together and took off and went over to Florida for a couple of years.
Wow. Wow. What a great coach to kick off your coaching with.
Yeah, he was great, man. And I was there for a couple of years and then had the opportunity to go work for one of your boys in Louis Orr, because Louis was the head coach at Bowling Green.
Yeah.
And you know, Bowling Green is only 20 minutes from my house, so that was another great opportunity. So things just kind of fell into place on the coaching side, and I was with Coach Orr for 5 years, man. And then once they let us go in Bowling Green, I started coaching at a high school, and I couldn't do the high school thing, man. The kids were just a little bit, you know, great kids, but they were a little bit behind for what I was looking for and what I wanted to teach. So after that, started coaching some AAU, doing some AAU stuff. And then the school that I'm at now, Lords University, which is an NAIA school, it's in the suburbs of Toledo where I'm from. They called, and again, I accepted, man. And we've been doing well for the 3 years I've been here.
Wow. Now what do you feel like is your toughest challenge?
You know, the toughest challenge is, man, it's not like it used to be. And again, me and you play together in Chicago. So PJ wasn't a yeller. But when you are younger and you're a coach, when my coaches used to yell, and I'm sure yours were the same way, when they yelled at everybody. Okay. They didn't have to turn around and say, okay, that's Michael. So I got to talk to Michael this way. And that's Bill. I need to talk to Bill that way. You know, when they yelled and they were consistent with their yell. And they yelled at everybody. But now kids are a little different. Some are fragile, some are timid. So, you know, you have to turn around and see who you're getting ready to talk to. And before you say anything, you have to know that kid's personality. And you have to approach him different. Might be a little different than what you might approach somebody else on a team. So I think knowing your kids nowadays versus just kind of going off on a kid in the past, you just can't do that nowadays. You really have to know who you're dealing with and approach him to where you don't lose him.
Yeah, you know, it's really funny because that's a big part of my coaching tool, to where not only do you get close to your player, but I had an opportunity to watch KC Jones. Mm-hmm. And KC would bring you over. He'd bring you over and sit down. And then now he basically tell you, look, this is what I need from you. Mm-hmm. If I can't get it, you're going to be sitting next to me. And it was as simple as that. It wasn't anything, wasn't yelling, wasn't screaming. It's just telling you, this is what I need. And it was a great lesson for me, for the coaching, because that's what I would want. I mean, we all get screamers. We all get yellers. We all get that. We all ignore them too. So the big thing.
But see, we could do that. You could separate. You could ignore back in the day. These kids, they hold on because, again, some of them have been through so much to where they're just fragile in general, you know, and you never know their situation until you actually sit down and talk to them. And again, it's just, if you want to keep them, you're going to have to I don't want to say adapt down to their level, because you always want them to come to your level, but you're going to have to be able to find that middle ground to where you can get them to, you know, keep them happy and get them to perform the way you want them to perform without losing them.
Yeah, it is really interesting. You know, I did have a coaching experience in Mexico and in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, you have to get to know them really well. The Japanese, they're still getting hit over there. So I had guys that were ducking away from me, and I'm like, whoa, whoa. We love our players. We don't hit them.
Right.
But a lot of people haven't had that. So that's, you know, that's a really good point about mm-hmm. coaching and getting to know your players for who they really are.
That's right.
So what's ahead of you now? Is this where you want to be?
Or you know what? It's you know, we've almost won 60 games in 3 years. We actually won a tournament, the conference tournament championship this year, which has never been done here. And I would like the opportunity, man, if I can, to move back up. I'm gonna be honest, man. It's not that easy, man. It's not that easy. You know, you got the search firms and you have these coaches, man, that have their families. And if you're not a part of their families, they're family, they don't want to bring you in. You know, I know you experienced this as well. People think that whole NBA background is a plus. That NBA background is not always a plus, man. It's a curse. It's a curse for some people. So, again, if I had the opportunity, man, I would love to move up, man. But I haven't had any luck, man, so far. And like I said, we've almost won 60 games in 3 years, and that was with a pandemic year last year.
So, do you feel like it's advantageous to have a search firm or an agent?
Well, they say the search firms work with the agents. Okay, so they say you need to have an agent. And again, man, if I talk to this is funny, because if I talk to a college guy and ask him, well, who are you working with? They're either going to tell me he's not taking anybody right now, or he's not doing the job for me, Hop, so I'm gonna get rid of him. So it's one of those things where they don't want to share that information. So again, man, I'm at bat, but I'm striking out. Striking out. I just don't have the right people, man, in my corner right now.
Well, I'm sure you'll end up in the right spot where you should be.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You know, you're doing a good job, and you know, just looking at your resume is just very impressive, the experiences that you've had.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Hey, talk about your family a little bit.
You know what, man? I'm blessed. I'm blessed. Let me tell you, I'm super, super blessed. Again, I told you I'm the baby of five. Great, great mom and dad, great brothers and sisters. You know, I got a girlfriend that I'm super, super close with, man. We get along very well. We've been together. Actually, we're going to be getting engaged soon.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, you know, hey, Bill, she's been with me for 10 years, man. So, you know, it comes a time to where you know what you got. So why lose it because you're not doing what you need to do? So,
yeah.
You know, we're close. We're close in that area. And I think, again, when we talk about kids, we had the stability coming up that a lot of these kids don't have. And like I said, you know, people ask me, am I disappointed? Was I disappointed when my dad passed? Yeah, I'm not disappointed. I mean, who wants to lose a parent? But like I tell them, I had the opportunity of enjoying my dad for 56 years. You know, I turned 57 last month, but I had the opportunity of enjoying my dad for 56 years, man. And he was always there, you know, and I would come out of a locker room at, you know, before a game, and I knew exactly where mom and dad were going to be sitting. And so the support was there. And hey, man, he was 88 years old when he passed. So, hey, I can't harbor any feelings in regards to my relationship with my dad and my mom, brothers and sisters as well.
Awesome. Well, Hop, thank you so much for being on the show.
I've
always appreciated you. We've always had a good time, and we need to start having some more.
Yep, you're right, man. I talked to Horace and I talked to Scotty 2 days ago, and we were talking about the same things, man. You know, because we're getting older, and hey, man, you guys were great, man. And I love the friendships, and I want to keep them. I want to keep them, man. So I appreciate you.
Yeah, well, we wish you a lot of luck. I'm gonna stay on top of you.
Yeah.
Naturally, if you need anything from me, I'm always around.